Hi, it's Rachel McElroy.
Hey, it's Griffin McElroy.
And it's wonderful.
It's coming at you fresh. It's coming at you hot.
I'm trying something new.
Hey, it's Griffin. Hey, what's up? It's Griffin and Rachel.
It's your girl.
It's your girl and your boy, Rachel and Griffin. Here for another show of podcast.
I don't like the grunting.
I feel like I have to flex a little bit. If this is that felt like the right energy for me.
Okay, okay.
Just a sort of like MTV Spring Break, like, it's Griffin. Were you ever at an age where you saw MTV Spring Break and thought, man, it looks like fun.
No.
I'd like to be out there. No, okay.
It wasn't for you and me.
Well, okay, let's not.
All right, it wasn't for me.
Yeah, I could have danced up on a stage. Super duper duper cool.
Uh-huh.
Me and Kurt Loder, just like.
Yeah, Kurt Loder.
Kurt Loder,
famous dancer. Kurt Loder was always old, you know?
I adore Kurt. I got to meet Kurt Loder when I did the street team stuff.
I had
lunch with him and Sway, and it was one of the most memorable meals of my entire life. Sway just sat down with us like, hey, what's up? Can I sit here? And we were like, yes, Sway, you can, because you're Sway. Anyway, I worry narrow casting to people with a deep well.
Can I be honest?
I
don't even know who Sway is.
Oh my God, babe.
I've only heard of Sway through your mentioning of this very specific experience.
This very specific luncheon that I had.
Yeah. Kurt Loder and Sway.
Do you have any small wonders before we really get into the nitty gritty of it? The meat of the matter?
Do you want to go first?
I've been having trouble sleeping lately.
Yeah.
Which means I've been dipping my toe back into the waters of ASMR.
Oh.
And I like a weird ASMR at this point. When I say, I guess that is an incredibly loaded and nonspecific
term. Yeah, what makes a weird ASMR?
I like the ones where it's like, we're going to put this like 3D microphone into like a bunch of Orbeez, and it's like, yeah, that sounds pretty good actually.
Can I tell you something that's maybe revealing about me and my own fears of intimacy? Is that ASMR feels like something like I'm not supposed to be doing.
It's inherently quite intimate, and there are smarter folks than I have certainly waxed philosophical about the sort of like neurological link between the sort of stimulation response and like the feeling of, ooh, this is you're whispering in my ears. Like it is tough to separate that out. But I find that, I don't know, there are a few videos that I find are genuinely quite helpful for
it works,
mellowing me out.
I think the same part of me that doesn't like someone touching my face also doesn't like ASMR.
For sure. I don't get into a lot of talking though. Like there's a lot of videos that's just like, this is, we're going to submerge your head in a bucket of Orbeez.
See, that's better. Then you're not like in relationship with the Orbeez.
I like to keep a distance away from my ears and people on the internet's sort of mouth sounds. But Orbeez, dunk my head right in those nasty balls. Let's go.
God, I hope nobody extracts that terrible phrase
you just
said out loud.
Everybody's just ripping our sound quotes out to make like weird deep fake voicemails for themselves and stuff. Certainly that was enough time.
Yes. I am going to say like a jumperoo, a bouncer.
Oh, yeah.
This is, of course, for the babies.
Yeah, sure.
Before they can stand up and jump on their own, you can put them in this device designed to allow them to live that dream.
Yeah.
And our youngest little Gus, he is so delighted by it.
Yes.
It's like you can tell that he's like, I can't normally do this.
Uh-huh. It's really, it's turbo empowering for a baby who I can't crawl yet, but you put me in this special device and I can fucking jump really high.
Yeah.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, it doesn't matter like what time of day or how many times he's been in it. Every time he gets in, he's like,
what? Are you kidding me?
I'm upright?
Yeah.
It's great.
It's very good. Yeah. Our boys are really good right now.
They're getting good now.
They're really good now. I mean, we love them with our soul, the core of our existence, right? But yeah. There have been highs and lows.
And those of you that listened to our early episodes with the second one know that he was quite an angry infant. And complete 180.
Complete 180. Total dreamboat now. Yeah. And him and Henry have been like goofing around together. Oh, shit. That's so good. It's such good stuff. I feel it's funny. Like, we do this show where we talk about things that we like and things that we're into. And if we were being 100% like with the audience all the time, like, it would just be us talking about our kids nonstop because they do things that are so delightful and like soul nourishing literally all the time. But I feel like that is, I don't know. That's like probably a thing that I'm sure some folks like hearing about and stuff, but I don't know that we could sustain a podcast out of, well, okay, Henry.
Well, and also like nobody likes your kid as much as you like your kid.
That's another fair point.
I find that even like, we have friends who have children whose children are approximately the same age that we see all the time. And when they talk to me about their kids, I just know I'm not as interested as they think I might be.
Well, yeah. I mean, that, but that's true of not just, I mean, that's true of anybody, right? That's true of any parent on the planet.
So I just assume the listener who has no real vested interest in our children is like, cool.
I just want to say to our friends who do listen to our podcast, I love hearing about it. Just keep that train rolling. I don't know why Rachel has taken this stance.
It's just the sparkle and the joy in their voice, I know cannot be matched by me who did not produce their children.
Right, sure. I go first this week. I feel so sure I have glanced off this topic before, but it is in the like pantheon of things that I think are valuable and life-changing for me. GPS is like maybe number one up on there. As far as I can tell, I talked about geocaching, which maybe is where we discussed GPS before.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Because that is partially what inspired this, because Henry and I went geocaching at a park in Austin this past weekend, and it was super, super fun.
Did he, like, get into, like, I don't know what technology you used, but were you, like, looking at a map?
Yeah, we were looking at a map on my phone and, like, had a compass that was, like, leading our way to it, and before we found the first cache, he was like not super into it, but then we opened it up and he found this little tiny astronaut eraser inside of it that we replaced with, I think, a Carcassonne piece. And at that point, he was like, hell yes, treasure, let's go. But like, I try very hard not to like go full Andy Rooney on this podcast, but like, this is probably the biggest thing that I feel like folks born into like smartphones don't really cannot appreciate is the fact that like when you used to leave your house to go somewhere new or somewhere that you were unfamiliar with, 50% of the time you would get lost.
Yes.
There was a reality where you would, If somebody showed up to a party that we were throwing and they were 2 hours late in 2021 and were like, sorry, man, I got lost, I would be like, that's baloney.
What I used to do a lot is I would print out the directions off of MapQuest. And the problem with that is that if you take a wrong turn,
if you take one wrong turn,
the directions are useless to you unless you're able to like reverse engineer, like, okay, I turned left here when I should have turned right. So in order to get back to where I was, I should turn right.
Yeah. And even then, like, there was a long period of time before MapQuest, right? Like, I feel like by the time I was like driving, MapQuest was there for me. And I definitely took a couple of long-ass road trips with like 30 pages of MapQuest printed out yeah. to get me from point A to point B. I get to drive from Huntington to Boston and back on MapQuest directions, which is wild to me. But at the same time, like one of the last trips I took pre-iPhone, pre-like GPS on my on the thing I, you know, take pictures with and post them on the internet, I went to Chicago, and on the way back, I got lost in Cincinnati for a long time because there's like one on-ramp that I just could not find yeah. to get me to the highway. I drove on the wrong side of the highway for a little bit in Cincinnati, which was
oof.
Rough. I had to like pull onto the shoulder and just like wait for there to be no cars
oh, gosh.
Anywhere. It was terrifying.
I mean, when you moved here in 2011, I still didn't have GPS on my phone.
Yeah, that's bonkers.
I was
to
still
me.
Using like a little flip phone.
Because by the time I moved to Cincinnati, that was just about the time where I had the iPhone, which like I genuinely would not have done it if I did not have a smartphone with GPS on it. Because I don't like being lost. I don't like yeah. I don't like that experience. I certainly would not have moved to Chicago without it.
That is one of the things that you and I have never really had to weather as a couple, is the experience of being lost with somebody is so stressful. And I don't know that you and I have ever really had to deal with that.
Definitely. Like when we were in Hong Kong, like on our international trips, certainly we got lost while looking for places.
Yeah. I guess you're right.
Definitely.
But just like a restaurant or something, not like, you know.
Home.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So I feel like this is the big thing that I take for granted because I use it a lot, like a few times a week if I'm going somewhere, even places I've been before, right?
Oh, like, yeah.
There are some kids' activities that I like to do with Henry here in Austin that are like a good 30, 40 minutes away from the city. And even though I've been to them dozens of times, I still don't like fuck around with that. Like I'll punch it into my phone because that takes 1 second. And it saves me from driving the wrong direction for yeah. a half hour. So GPS, by the way, I'm using that term sort of generically, like the capital GPS global positioning system is owned and operated by the U.S. government. It's actually operated by the Space Force, previously known as the U.S. Air Force Space Command before it was split off into its own independent branch of the military, which is still bonkers to me, but there's like other, you know, countries, other world powers with their own global positioning systems and independent tech and stuff like that. I'm talking about specifically map on the phone or special map electronics that you can have in your car. That technology unsurprisingly has like a long lineage tracing like all the way back to like radio navigation in the early 20th century. In the 60s, like especially during the space race, like work toward GPS tech was done and all of that stuff was very classified. And so it's hard to sort of know, to pinpoint the exact origins of it. But in 1973, the Department of Defense created a 24 satellite array that would go up into orbit and then would, you know, help you figure out where you are in relation to whatever satellites were visible to your device at that time. That was 1973. It wouldn't become fully operational until like 1995.
Do you have any, and I am not trying to put you on the spot, but do you have any understanding of how satellites, like, how do they get them where they want them to be, and how do they make sure they stay there?
I mean, it's very complicated stuff from yeah. what I mean, they get them up there like they get anything up into space, which is to say they boost that shit. They thrust that shit up there and then get it into a, you know, geosynchronous, that's not what that word means, an orbit that will like.
Yeah, but they have to like, how do they pick a spot and then they put it and it just like doesn't just float away.
Well, because it stays in orbit around Earth, and as long as like the momentum of it doesn't, it won't change because there's no, and I'm sure they have little like correctional thrusters and stuff in case they need to put a little bit of English on.
Yeah, because there's always stuff like debris, you know.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know, like. I always kind of took for granted the idea that there were satellites and they helped us know things about our Earth. But
right.
I just in this moment now, I'm like, How are they still there?
Yeah, well, the U.S. owned and operated global positioning system is made out of, at this point, 31 satellites. That's it, by the way, which seems like not very many satellites.
Does it for space?
Yeah, and I think like back in the day, it was like if four of them could see you at any point, like they could, you know, not triangulate, quadrangulate your position. But today, you know, there are more satellites, and so it is easier to sort of get more accuracy to the, when I was geocaching with Henry, it was like, you're 1.5 feet away from it. Like, holy shit, space eyes. You can tell that?
Yeah. Well, you know how they know it's the vaccines.
The vaccines do, it's just a bunch of tiny satellites. That you put right in your, that's not true. Please get vaccinated. Holy shit. It's just like this entire field of like cartography and navigation was supplanted by this technology that became incredibly ubiquitous, incredibly fast. Like I bought an iPhone. And there were other, what was it? TomTom was like the one that you could get. There were like GPS.
Or Garmin.
Garmin, yeah. Like things that you could like buy our, you know, 1999 Jeep Grand Cherokee. It's got a Garmin in it. That's like just right there, right on it. And now it's like, well, I just plug my phone into the shit. But like, this was a thing. A human civilization experience of like, I got to get from here to there. Time to figure out how. And some people were good at it, and some people were bad at it. And there were entire industries based around like, here's an atlas of all the highways of, Tennessee. And then they were like, but now you just do it on the phone and all that shit is now completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
And that's wild to me whenever that happens to any kind of huge thing that it can be just sort of replaced overnight.
There's so many comedians that had bits about folding maps and how difficult it was.
Those are gone now.
And now none of it matters.
Those are just done now. I don't know. I find it very... from a just sort of like conceptual standpoint, I find GPS, the fact that it works, kind of remarkable.
Yeah.
The fact that it is everywhere, pretty remarkable. The fact that you don't really get lost anymore, and the reducing the amount of anxiety that caused me, which is to say a tremendous amount of anxiety, because I don't
completely.
Have a keen navigational sense. Remarkable. Like it's very cool, and it is the kind of thing that like in my lifetime I didn't have, and then I'm probably among one of the final generations of whom that is true. And this is not like a you kids today don't know, like I'm genuinely glad that kids today won't experience the anxiety of driving the wrong way down a highway in Cincinnati for 2 hours. But it is novel to me that, like, that's a thing that happened to us and then probably won't happen to the folks who come after us. Like, right after us.
Yeah, to just, like, to have the comfort of knowing that when our children are old enough to drive and they are going somewhere.
I pulled over at a gas station and borrowed their phone to call Dad. Like, hey, I'm lost. And he's like, where are you? And I'm like, a gas station in Cincinnati. There are trees outside. Like, oh, man.
Yeah, I did. I've definitely done that before where it's just like, I am on this highway near this exit. I can tell you that. And then just sitting on the phone with my dad.
I can see your dad at the fucking command center.
No, I to ruin your impression, but neither of my parents are particularly good with directions.
Well, they still print out MapQuest directions, which I admire tremendously. Can I steal you away?
Yes.
Thank you. Got a couple of Jubble Bobs here, and this first one's for Justin, and it's from Tyne, who says... Happy anniversary, Yabies. I am so thankful for your unconditional love and support. I'm grateful for all the laughs we have shared together listening to all the McElroy content over the past decade. Cheers to 12 years and counting. You are a force all on your own, and there is no greater privilege than to love you for a lifetime. Tyne, and Zoe. Have we really been creating content for 10 calendar years? I think maybe even closer to 11.
Me and you, no.
No, I suppose not. We've known each other for about 10 years. You met me at the...
More than 10 years now.
Prime of my life. At the... When I was at my most sort of
it's just been a
supple,
steep decline.
All
since
downhill
then.
From that supple young gentleman.
Oh, can I read this next one?
Of course.
It's for Brunch Squad and from Chess. Back at it again with the Brunch Squad lovin'. Y'all, I can't believe it's only been 2.5 years since that faithful, spontaneous brunch in Nashville. I can't thank you enough for the love and support you send year-round. You are my family. I can't wait to hold all 8 of you collectively in my arms again. Until then, so much love, Chess.
Starting to think Chess might be a secret octopus. If you're trying to hold 8 people in your arms all at once, the only way that works, spatially speaking, is if Chess is an octopus that learned how to do internet stuff.
And shout out to friends of the show, Brunch Squad.
Yes, shout out to Brunch Squad.
Always love hearing about them, what they're up to.
Sure. But can we get back to this octopus-human hybrid that listens to our show?
Yes,
And has money to with which to purchase and secure a Jumbotron.
I think it's a wingspan thing. I don't think you necessarily need all the arms. I think you need a good reach.
I see.
Yes.
No, it's a definitely octopus.
From the internationally acclaimed creators of Who Shot Ya comes the movie podcast Maximum Film, starring producer and film festival programmer Drea Clark as a woman bound by passion.
I saw this 8 months ago on the festival circuit, and I loved it.
Film critic Alonzo Duralde as a man corrupted by greed.
Why watch one Hallmark Christmas movie when I can watch 7?
And comedian Ify Wadiwe as a man protecting a love that society simply won't accept.
I think Pacific Rim is a perfect movie, and if you can't accept that, then I want you out of my life!
From the makers of the movie podcast Who Shot Ya comes Maximum Film.
That's right, we changed the name of our show to Maximum Film.
But don't worry, we're still a movie review show that isn't just a bunch of straight white dudes.
So tune in to Maximum Film at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You want to know my thing?
I bet I can guess what it is.
Well, don't cheat.
Wink!
It's carrots.
Oh.
No.
Whoa!
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Carrots, come on.
They're terrible.
In the ground.
That's not true. I love carrots so much.
I know, I do too. Right. Next week, carrots.
Next week, look out for it. You can put them in a soup. You can dip them.
Bunnies eat them.
The sound they make is excellent.
Yep. No, it's a trip to the poetry corner.
Boom, 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 boom.
I'm just going to keep walking down this fretboard until you tell me to stop.
There it is. Sometimes I like to see how long you can go before you just instantly start singing that.
Inevitable.
So this poetry corner was actually motivated by a listener.
Oh, hey!
Which is not something I've done before, but Milo Ray on Instagram reached out to me and said that they review books professionally and recently read a poetry collection that made them think of me. And typically I, you know, would or wouldn't, you know, I don't have a strong process for taking recommendations, but I just said, okay, I'm looking for new poetry.
Sure.
And I found the new collection of poetry and the first collection of poetry from Rachel Long called My Darling from the Lions.
Now, did you just pick this poet because they got the same name as you?
You got me. I bet for you that's like a real...
Never, ever, ever happens.
That's a real thing.
Yeah, sure. It's just me and Griffin Newman out here sort of holding it down. Uh-huh. And appropriately, we do get confused for each other, I think, a great deal. Because it's just the two of us. Uh-huh. We can make it if we try.
Rachel Long. So this book actually, she is a UK poet. And it was released in the UK in 2020, and then Tin House picked it up here, and it just came out this month.
Oh, wow.
In the US. And it's pretty incredible.
Yeah?
It's pretty incredible.
What's it like for you finding, like, a new poet, these days? Because I know you're not, like, constantly seeking it out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I was in Chicago, Chicago has such a, like, crazy, vibrant literary community. Right. There are readings constantly. And so I was finding new poets literally every week. And then that time in my life ended. Mm-hmm. And there are definitely poets that come to Austin, Texas. I'm just very removed from that scene. So I went years without finding a new poet. And now, like, I've kind of taken it on as a job a little bit.
Yeah.
And so it's very exciting. When I was in school, I had a very academic sensibility, and then I kind of returned to my preschool sensibility of, like, I just want something that I can sit down and read and enjoy, yeah. Not something I have to, like, look up 25 references for. And Rachel Long is just a really great poet in that regard. She writes a lot from her personal experience and seems to just kind of inherently have a sense of what is interesting and important, because each of her poems, like, she doesn't write any, like, I ate a really good apple and took a nap kind of poem.
Yeah.
Which can be a good poem. I mean, you know, I love some William Carlos Williams, you know, like,
my man loves produce for,
like,
sure.
Yeah. Like, a good plum. Thanks.
Yeah.
But Rachel Long's poems, speak really strongly to her personal experience and makes it, I don't know. It's hard to really speak to what exactly she's doing. So maybe I'll just read one of them.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea.
You hear the pages rustling?
I love that.
This is like an actual book that I bought.
Yeah. It's not one of them cyber books.
This poem is called Thanksgiving. As if by accident, I find my head washed up window side of his bed. After all that fucking, look, the sky is still pinned up. His nose is longer with his eyes shut. This whole time I've been holding, squeezing, wringing, folding, bending, nodding. Thank you, God, for giving me someone who makes me hold my breath. I will be so light upon his life, he won't realize he's kept me. I'll leave not a mark on his pillow, papers, knife, DVDs, or wine glass. What blessing. Only when he is sleeping can I breathe out. So deep my ribs come up like a ship.
Wow.
Wow. Isn't that great?
That's good stuff.
Yeah. She writes a lot.
I don't appreciate the language, if I'm being honest. The coarse language.
The coarse language, yeah, no, I know.
At the top.
I know swearing makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah, because it's a poem, you know? It's supposed to be like...
It's supposed to be a...
I can't even pretend to be this person.
A little crumb scraper on a table, you know? That's what a poem is.
Yeah, it's all thou, and thou art.
So she is a Black woman who has done a lot to speak to the experience of women of color. In fact, she is actually a founder of a poetry collective called the Octavia Poetry Collective for Women of Color, based at the South Bank Center in the UK. She talks a lot about the experience of being what she calls, like, both the invisible and also hypervisible. And in an interview with The Guardian, she talks about how you're either the spokesperson or the translator.
Yeah.
And her experience just in school, like, particularly in higher education, like, not finding a place for herself and being, you know, like I said, like, invisible but also hypervisible.
Right.
And so that poem kind of gets at that a little bit, of just this idea of, like, trying to exist in this space and be what somebody else wants you to be.
Right.
You know? And I mean, you know, obviously I don't have that exact experience, but that experience of being with somebody that you feel is different than you and trying to just keep everything unique about yourself, like, hidden.
Yeah, sure.
You know, this idea of like she doesn't exhale until she knows he's asleep. I feel like there are a lot of people that can kind of speak to that experience of like, yeah. I'm with somebody who, you know, would see my flaws and see my reality. And you worry,
this is very, a very relatable thing, I think, for people who have been in a maybe not so great relationship. Yeah. But just like, if I make myself even the smallest bit of a burden,
yeah,
this whole thing is just
going to crash. So her book, the book that I am talking about today, My Darling from the Lions, talks a lot about her growing up and her experience of, you know, being somebody of mixed race and trying to figure out how to navigate that.
Sure.
Is really powerful. It's really well done and really like subtle, but done in a very kind of interesting, exciting way. I read this interview between her and Alice Hiller, who is a blogger, and she asks kind of about, you know, her experience of writing and growing up and kind of how she captured that in her book. And Rachel Long responded, being of dual heritage, I grew up in a white working class area on the outskirts of London. My schools were majoritively white, my friends, half my family. I'm not sure that I thought of myself as black for a long time, mixed, half caste, dark, light skinned, all the rest of it, but not black particularly. That was an understanding, a knowledge, and an acceptance of a self that I had to carve out later. As I grew up, as left that estate, as I read, spoke, and understood myself within a much wider context. When I was a girl, I thought you had to choose what color you were. I remember sitting in the back seat of my dad's car, dad driving, mom in the passenger seat, and suddenly thinking you must choose now whether you want to be white like dad or black like mom. Isn't that disturbing? And as I thought that I get to choose how the world perceives me.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot to take on in a first collection of poetry.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
And she does it in a way that it feels very intimate and very relatable. And she just talks about, like, there's this great, like, series of poems about her playing with Barbies when she's a kid and having, like, a Ken doll and then a black doll, like, that was Steve. And the experience of, like, playing with your dolls with Ken and Steve, and Ken being this, like, ideal, and Steve being this thing that she is trying to, like, fit into this world of Barbie and Ken. It's a really great group of poems. And I would recommend it. It's exciting, I feel like, to find a poet that is this new.
Yeah.
And has so much to say in this first collection. And, yeah, I would really encourage people to check it out. Rachel Long.
Thank you to
Milo. Thank you, Milo,
for sending that in. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's nice. I like that you got
a new friend.
A new friend.
Yeah, no, finding a new poet, especially at the beginning of their career, is really exciting. It's like, I mean, it's like finding a new musical artist or I don't know. What resonates with you? Like a new...
What you're about to say is going to be insane. Yeah, I can sometimes I can tell when you're like running up to something that's going to be like fake demean. Like, you're not a demeaning person for the fact that I play a lot of video games, but sometimes you play that character a little bit. So like you were thinking, I'm going to guess like it's like when Mario learns a new jump or something like that, or they like announce a new Pokemon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I like to play at you being this character that I think some of the world has reduced you to.
Sure, yeah.
And then sometimes it feels so mean I can't even get it out of my mouth.
Like
and,
then. Like that just was then. Now, yeah.
That was then.
No, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We know each other now. Hey, thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use for our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Go to MaximumFun.org. Check out all the great shows there. They got so many podcasts. Talk about Maximum Film. We did a fun thing with them from a Bim Bam that will be out at some point. I mean, then you got, there's so many freaking shows.
The Flop House. They just did a live show that I think you can still get tickets for.
Yeah.
Where they watch the original Mario Brothers movie.
That's fun. We have to go right now because somebody's at our front door. But thank you all. And thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week.
And keep it up.
Keep it going. Keep it up. Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.